Okay, well, hello everyone, and it's great to be back in sunny Javier talking to Javier Book Circle again, except that I'm in very sunny Somerset. I want to thank Rod for enhancing this PowerPoint presentation. So some of the colours you'll see are not exactly Scottish. They're very much Spanish enhanced. I've been working on a chapter for a book called Crime Fiction and Ecology, which a friend of mine is editing. And during the first lockdown, I've been reading the trilogy of crime novels of Peter May set on the Isle of Lewis, which my son had been urging me to read for years and years. And during the first lockdown, I just wanted easy reading and I read them. And then suddenly this invitation to contribute a chapter to this book came out of the blue. And I thought, aha, this is a great chance to have another look at the role of ecology on the Isle of Lewis in the novels of Peter May. I'd never been to the Isle of Lewis. And so last October half term, I went with my son and granddaughters to the Isle of Lewis. They stayed a week, and then I had an extra week starting writing this chapter on crime fiction and ecology. So that's the background to where this has come from. The Isle of Lewis in the Western Isles catches the first of the Atlantic storms that come through. And so people say on Lewis, if you don't like the weather, wait 10 minutes. And it changes. So it's a place of rainbows. It's traditionally a place of crofts, of crofting, subsistence crofting. And here you can see the narrow strips of a croft going down to the Marram sand dunes at the coast, and then the sea fishing is part of the crofting makeup. And you'll also notice there are very narrow roads. This is just north, a road going north from the main town of Stornoway, which is where the ferries arrived and where I flew to from Glasgow for this October half term visit. And way out in the distance there, you're looking up to the most northerly point of Lewis, which is called Ness, more of which later. And here, the traditional use of peat for fuel is still going on the Isle of Lewis, even though these are fairly modern and renovated houses. Every crofting family had a patch where they could dig their peats for cooking and heating. And this is a modern stack of peats just outside the house where I photographed this, just north of Stornoway. Each of these individual peats has been hand cut. It's been then stacked to dry in tripods. Then it's been put in plastic sacks. The sacks have been hauled to the car, then hauled out of the car and made into this marvelous peat stack here. So there's a traditional way of life that is still partly being sustained on the Isle of Lewis. So where are we? Down in the bottom right-hand corner, you'll see Scotland, and you'll see the Outer Hebrides stuck out there on the top northwest. And here you can see at the north of the Outer Hebrides, Lewis and Harris. You'll notice that the Isle of Harris is joined to the Isle of Lewis and isn't in fact an isle at all. And then coming south, you get North Uist and South Uist and Barra and a number of named islands. The island of Eriskay off South Uist is going to appear in one of the novels. So here's a location of various situations in Peter May's novels on the island of Lewis and Harris. 16 is the location of a novel called Coffin Road, which I'll just touch on, that is set on Harris. And it's called Coffin Road because the rocky land on the east side of Harris didn't allow for burials. And so coffins were carried across Harris to the burial ground and the marvellous Murrum Dunes of Luskintyre on Harris. Number 2 and number 5 are Stornoway. And there is no road between Stornoway directly and 13, which is the point of Ness. Ness is the furthest northern point. So to travel from Ness, you have to come to 11 and then across Babas Moor here, across to Stornoway here. When the island was bought by Lord Leverhulme in 1918, he wanted to invest in a road that joined Ness with Stornoway and started pushing it up and developing it. And it got as far as a bridge here, which features in the novels, and then petered out because it was going to be too expensive to do it. So everyone who lives in who lives up here in Ness has to come on a dogleg road here to Stornoway if they work in Stornoway. Here is Uig over on this side here, which is going to play a part in the novel called The Chessmen, and that's where we stayed in last October. So there's the layout of Lewis and Harris. This is, in fact, the bridge to nowhere. This is the end of the road that Lord Leverhulme pushed forward to try and join Stornoway and Ness. And so the school kids on the island, when they go to secondary school, have to go to Stornoway, and they stay at a school called the Nicholson Institute, boarding during the week and go home at the weekends. And older teenagers have mopeds that appear in the novels, and they hang out here at the furthest end of the road at the bridge to nowhere. So here is Peter May, who was an award-winning journalist at the age of 21. He left newspapers for television and screenwriting. In fact, for many years, he was associated with a Gaelic language series for Scottish television based at Uig, where we stayed, called Macca. So he became one of Scotland's most prolific dramatists and garnered more than 1,000 credits in 15 years writing scripts for primetime British television drama. Born and raised in Scotland, he now lives in southwest France, where he focuses on his first love of writing novels. So here is Uig Sands, the location of Pete and May's Gaelic language series. And for many months of a year, over 15 years, he stayed here and got to know Lewis culture really well. He was looking for an idea for his next novel, and he wrote that a wild, windswept corner at the extreme northwest of Europe that no one had ever used as a setting for a crime novel was an ideal place, a place I knew so intimately that it was almost part of me. So here are the three of the novels of the Lewis trilogy: The Black House, The Lewis Man, and The Chess Men. And there is a standalone novel, Coffin Road, which uses one of the characters, the Lewis policeman from Stornoway, appears in the Coffin Road as a separate novel set on Harris. Okay. So here is The Black House. Ironically, this picture is not of a black house. This is actually a white house. It's a white house because it's got a roof, and a black house has a thatched or turf roof. Here is a traditional black house, and this is taken at eye level, so this is a very low single door, no windows, and thatch and turf, no chimney. You can see the smoke from the fire perhaps emerging out of the turf. And in this first half would be the animals, and in the other half of the house would be the peat fire and the beds along shelves on the side of the walls for people. So here's a white house, a white croft house with a proper roof, and you can see the strips of crofting land going down towards the sea. And in the far distance, in the centre, you can see the lighthouse at Ness on its furthest northernmost point. And this collection of houses here is Port of Ness. So Ness is a huge area of a number of different little townships on the northern tip of Lewis, and they distinguish Ness, the larger community, from Port of Ness, where the original little port is in here. This is a rarity on Lewis, and it's such a rarity that it's fenced in, and it's such a rarity that it's been allowed to grow and overwhelm the house, because this house has been able to grow trees. And this is a collection of trees. But this is what most of inland Lewis is like. The crofts are necessarily along the coasts, the strip roads that run along the cliff tops. Most of Lewis is bog. This is a shearling. This is a home for people who come up out with the cattle in the summer. This is a summer shearling. It's distinctive with a green roof, and this distinctive house appears in the Black House novel. This is on the road to Stornoway, which crosses the centre of the island, and it's at this point that Finn's parents had a road accident and were both killed. Finn is the detective who runs the inquiries of all three of the Lewis trilogies. So his parents were killed here at this famous point on the road where this green roofed shearling is. He was taken in by his auntie, who lived just along the road in the same township of Crowbost up there in Ness. So Finn MacLeod says to his former girlfriend, "The world's like the weather, Marcelly. You can't change it, and you can't shape it, but it'll shape you." People in these novels are clearly shaped by storms, but also aware of the state of the tides, the bleak appearance of peat bogs, the resistance of gneiss, the recurrence of rainbows, the different qualities of beaches that appear to be simply of sand, but need paying attention to because they become a clue in the novels, and the particular configuration of beaches, bays, cliffs, and the maca. The maca is the grassland behind the marram-grassed dunes, and moorland that, as you've seen, defines the Isle of Lewis, and its mountainous attached isle of Harris. The mountains of Harris are usually always to be seen when you're on Lewis, but Lewis itself is mostly a flat peat bog. But people are also shaped by social ecology, and the crofting subsistence is a level of poverty which is totally dependent on the ecology, on weather, and on soils, and on geography. And of course, fishing is part of that. So small scale local fishing The oil industry for a time came and went and came and went in Stornoway. And in the novels, the oil industry is represented by dead-end jobs. And what in his latest novel Peter May calls the stubborn puritanical religion of Lewis, which is a Protestant island. And Peter May points out that there are five different Protestant sects on Lewis. He's fairly anti the Protestant church on Lewis in these novels. Of course, neighborliness is thrown up by these conditions, as is resourcefulness and a certain amount of discretion, because everybody knows what's happening to everybody else. And also this underlying moral sensibility. I've said material poverty because, of course, this is the most, in some respects, the most beautiful location with the most beautiful beaches and mountains and hills. But if you're earning a living off this landscape, that's not something that you think of all the time. There's another aspect to the novels that you need to grasp, and that is what I call islandness, which has a different quality in youth as compared with middle age. One of the characters says, you can never escape the island. Finn goes to university in Glasgow. He leaves the island. He drops out of university. He becomes a policeman in Edinburgh. But the island is always at the back of his consciousness. So for kids, there is the desire to go, to get out of this place, to see the world and escape this claustrophobic social ecology. And then there is always this lingering need to return. So there's a difference between those left behind and the privileged leavers amongst the kids who all go to the Nicholson Institute in Stornoway at school together. In the idyllic summer before Finn leaves the island for university, he has a conversation on a beach with his best friend, Artair, who is depressed about a bleak, dead-end future on the island, working as a welder in an oil rig construction yard. I can smell it already. And then there's all the years of travelling that fucking road from Ness to Stornoway, and a hole in the ground at the end of it all. Due to the nature of the land, of course, there's no direct road between Ness and Stornoway. Finn tries to cheer his friend by saying, hey, look around you. It doesn't come much better than this. Here is a rare moment when Peter May celebrates island ecology as aesthetics. That's not something he does regularly. Artair replies, yeah, and that's why you're in such a fucking hurry to leave. So here's this tension that faces all kids on the islands in the northwest of Scotland. It happened that Peter May was launching by Zoom his latest novel, The Night's Gate, and my local bookshop in Bath arranged a Zoom launch meeting with him, and I was able to ask him a question about the role of ecology in his fiction. And here is what he said on the 26th of March. I didn't choose crime fiction, it chose me. I wanted to write a first novel set in China about genetic food modification, but how to tell it? If I had a body found at the beginning, that would be a good start. And this novel was, in fact, The Firemaker. He'd been to China and had had a culture shock in China and wanted to write a novel set in China. I was trying to make a living as a novelist. After that first book, my publisher offered a deal if I wrote about the same characters in the same setting. So I fell into the genre. Crime fiction is a broad church. I've tried to push the boundaries of crime fiction. I have a great interest in environment, and I wrote a novel based upon bee colony collapse, and that was The Coffin Road. I was stopped by the pandemic from going to the Norwegian archipelago of Svalbard to research my next novel, a place which has been much affected by climate change. Yes, I believe that people are affected by their environment. In a place like the Outer Hebrides, you develop a way of living that is influenced by weather and geography, that is influencing your culture. A sense of place is always important to me. I never write about a place I've never been to. So here is the port of Ness, and here is the boat shed in which a body is found on the first pages of The Black House, the first novel of the trilogy. And here is the entrance to the port of Ness, just to the left of that last slide. This pier sticking out, protecting the entrance, has been damaged, and you'll see that it's pretty silted up, so that this the port of Ness is in fact only used for very shallow boats at the moment. I want you to look along the horizon at the row of houses going along there. That is the township in Ness called Crowbost, where Finn MacLeod was brought up. And we're going to look along that road of crofting houses. Here it is, Crowbost. You'll see there are crofting houses below the road and crofting houses above the road. And here's a typical modern crofting house with the crofting lines going down. Rather than using the port of Ness, there is a local little key here to which Finn MacLeod's father used for his fishing boat. His fishing boat was painted purple because washed up on the beach one day, Finn's father found a crate of cans of purple paint. So everything was painted purple. His house was painted purple and his boat was painted purple. And this is where he launched his boat for the fishing. Very important in the novel, in all three novels actually, is the church at Cross. This is Cross Church, one of the five Protestant sects. And also important in the novel, if I swing left from here, you look up at the manse of the church at Cross. And this plays a part in all three novels in the trilogy. So the Black House of the first novel, The Black House, is on an island 40 miles to the north of Lewes, where 12 men from Lewes go each August to harvest young gannets. It's an uninhabited rock, although there was a saintly person hermited on the island years ago. And there is a stone structure, the stone walls are left. And the 12 men of Ness who go for 2 weeks in August each year and have done since 1554, which is the earliest record in rowboats and sailboats at that time, they construct a black house by putting a tarpaulin over the walls of this shell, and they stay there for 2 weeks. They harvest 2,000 young gannets, which are called guga, and they singe them, strip the feathers off, salt them on the island. There are currently 10 men of Ness going each year. They have permission from the RSPB for this traditional hunt, and they have a license from the Scottish Government to continue this tradition. When they've salted the birds, they make this cairn of the product of the guga, which of course were essential for food as a food source, very nutritious food source for the islanders originally. The island is half a mile long and 200 yards wide. It has 200 foot cliffs. And so they construct this chute for shooting the birds down into the boat at the bottom. And this this Googa hunt forms the climax of a novel, The Black House. One of the things you need to remember is that what is said on the island, what happens on the island, stays on the island. And it is a great honor to be invited as a teenager to join the 12 men of Ness on the Googa hunt, although Finn rather dreads it, actually, and doesn't really want to take part in it, as you'll see in The Black House. Well, I think Peter May's writing has a tremendous compassion to it. Finn, his detective, is a flawed character. He's haunted by having mistreated his girlfriend who went to university in Glasgow with him. And the consequences of that come back to haunt him, and which he feels genuinely remorseful about and guilty about through the trilogy. And the Black House ends in a very poignant way with a tremendous compassion. But I think that compassion is most in evidence in the second novel of the trilogy, The Lewis Man, which takes as its central narrative structure the journeys of homers who were boarded out by childless Catholics from South Uist. South Uist is a Catholic island, from orphanages on the mainland. So people who didn't have children in South Uist boarded out homers, as they were called, from orphanages, who were completely transplanted and thereafter were brought up by the Catholics of South Uist. I ought to have said that in digging those peats, of course, there's always the possibility of digging up a body which might have been buried years before. And that is, in fact, the opening of the second novel, The Lewis Man. Finn, by the second novel, has stopped being a detective. He comes back to the island to repair his parents' abandoned croft house, abandoned like this one here. And so he is back now permanently living on the island. He realizes that DNA from the body discovered by the peat cutters connects that body with Marcelli's father, Tormod, who is now in the stages of dementia, living in a home. And this novel is multi-voiced. So we hear Tormod's voice. The rain is hammering on the window. It's making some din. When you were out in the moor, you never heard it, of course. You heard nothing above the wind, but you felt it all right, stinging your face when a force 10 drove it at you. Horizontal sometimes. I loved that feeling. Out there in the wild, just me and that great big sky and the rain burning my face. But they keep me cooped up inside these days. Not to be trusted outdoors, Bad Mary says. Finn gets talking to Tormod because he realizes the connection between the body and Tormod, and he's only got a week to sort out whether this is, whether Tormod is the prime suspect before the detectives arrive from the mainland. It's very rare that there is a murder on Lewis and Harris. There hadn't been one in living memory when I was there. And so they take their time coming over from the mainland with all their professional expertise. And he's got a week to sort out what the connection is between Tormod and this body found by the peat cutters. They take Tormod through South Harris. And Tormod looks through the car window and he says, it hardly seems familiar at all. Not sure if it's grass bursting through the rock or the rock bursting through the grass. It was a great moment of ecological humour. I used to ask my grandchildren this as we were driving around Lewis and Harris looking for these Peter May sites. Is the grass bursting through the rock, or is the rock bursting through the grass? There are also ecological clues in these novels. When Finn first went to Eriskay on his quest to discover the real identity of Marcelli's father, he remembered a detail from the post-mortem report on Peter's body found in the by the peat cutters. The pathologist had found fine silver sand in all the abrasions and contusions of the lower body, not golden sand, as found on the beaches of Harris, but silver sand, as found down here on what Tormod had called Charlie's Beach. So knowing your sands becomes an important clue in The Lewis Man. So we turn to the third novel in the trilogy, The Chessmen. The Chessmen were carved out of walrus tusk by Vikings and hidden in as a chess set, hidden in a little hollow in the dunes on Uig Sands. And they were found in the 19th century by a guy grazing his cattle who thought he'd found the fairies and rushed to the minister to confess. And they, in fact, turned out to be this very famous ancient chess set. So these become iconic figures all around Lewis. And here are two granddaughters, Isla Gifford on the left, and Elspeth Gifford on the right, Isla named after the Isle of Isla, where her father spent the first 10 Springbank holidays of his life. Isla Gifford on the left and Elspeth on the right on a chessmen. So you do find these figures. This is at the entrance to the one distillery on the Isle of Lewis. The most expensive single malt I've ever tasted in a tasting, and the most horrible. This is the figure called the Berserker. You need to know this figure. His teeth are down over his shield. Finn's school friend, Whistler, eventually earns a living making large-scale copies of the chessmen for sale to tourists. And he carves the face of a recognizable local character into the Berserker figure, which becomes an important clue in the Chessmen novel. So the third novel in the trilogy begins with an unusual ecological event and sustains more of an ecological environmental sense than the previous two novels through the issue of poaching and land ownership. Finn and his old friend Whistler wake after spending a night sheltering from a storm in a mountain beehive stone shelter. The beehives are shearlings where people would stay up on the mountain with the cattle during the summer. This is a beehive. And what they witness when they come out of this in the morning is that a loch has completely disappeared that was below them the night before. What happens is that the peat that holds in the loch dries out after a spell of very dry weather and very prolonged dry weather. And then when the rains come, the rains can't penetrate that band of peat, but they penetrate underneath it, and the dam, the peat dam that's holding the lock in place, is simply washed out as a solid block, oiled by the new rain underneath, and forced out by the water. This reveals an aeroplane in which there is a body at the beginning of this third novel, in which features the riparian industry on Lewis and Harris. The fishing, the rod fishing, very expensive rod fishing, salmon fishing business. This is a fishing lodge called Grimister on Lewis, quite near. I pass this all the time going to Uig. The sea is out on the right. This is a sea lock, and the salmon, migrating salmon, come in past here. Ted Hughes, my man Ted Hughes, the former poet laureate, stayed more than once in this fishing lodge here at Grimister. But if we swing left, we see the Grimister River coming into the sea lock, and it's been a series of weirs have been created to create fishing pools for the very expensive rod fishing, salmon fishing industry. So Whistler is a poacher, and here's his philosophy. A man's entitled to take from the land that the Lord gave us. This vocabulary is a common Lewis feature. And he gave it to us all, Finn. You cannot take it with you when you die, so how can anyone think they own it while they're living? This is an argument with which May himself appears to have some sympathy, evoking the still remaining memories of cruel clearances on Lewis in the mid-19th century, as traced in a book called On the Crofter's Trail by David Craig, if you're interested. The narrator of the novel says, and this is Peter May, a landowner continued to be seen in a strange, reluctant way as being superior, a regard landowners also had of themselves. The sense of deference to the laird, and the laird feeling this deference being owed. David Craig was the supervisor of my PhD and my mentor, really. He went around Lewis and Harris and the Outer Hebrides, asking people whether there were family memories of their family members having been cleared during the clearances. And he compiled a marvelous travels oral history on the Crofter's Trail of these memories that people still have. They could remember the color of the hat that their great-great-great-great-grandmother was wearing as she went on the boat to Canada. Something else that occurs in this final novel of the trilogy, Finn and Whistler on their mopeds from the Stornoway School in the evenings go up to the Bridge to Nowhere to the north of Stornoway, but they also sometimes come out of Stornoway to the south towards the airport, where there is a memorial to the Isle Eyre disaster. And as teenagers, Finn and Whistler discover that they are linked by one of the greatest tragedies, not only in the history of Lewis, but of British maritime history. At 2 a.m. on the 1st of January 1919, the HMY Isle Eyre hit rocks just yards from Stornoway Harbour entrance, whilst returning Royal Navy reservists from the islands to their homes in the Outer Hebrides. Over 200 island men who had survived the First World War drowned in the dark and stormy conditions a few yards from the shore, where there is now a memorial. John Finlay MacLeod managed to swim ashore with a line by which Whistler's great-grandfather saved the life of Finn's grandfather. So this is the true story of the Isle Eyre. Donald S. Murray, whose book on the Googa Hunters you saw earlier, has a marvelous novel about this disaster called As the Women Lay Dreaming. Donald S. MacLeod came from Ness himself. I found myself talking to him on a Zoom by accident recently. It's a marvelous novel, very moving novel. John Finlay MacLeod swam ashore with a line by which Whistler's great-grandfather was saved the life of Finn's grandfather. And here on the left is John Finlay MacLeod. And here on the right is the man who first came across on that line and his life was saved. And there, sitting on the very shore where the disaster took place, a few yards in front of them, on the occasion of the erection of this big memorial here. This is how close the boat was to the shore itself. But this is a storm night, and the boat was actually driven. It was misguided, misdirected. It wasn't the storm itself which caused this. It was human error. It's really worth having a look at. And a guy actually clung to this mast all night and was rescued in the morning. But that's how close it was. The war memorials around the Isle of Lewis for each of the little townships. And here is Ardewig at the top and Crowlister in the middle, have an addition for the Isle Eyre disaster. And so every war memorial doesn't just have the people who were killed in the war, but has people who survived the war but were killed within yards of reaching home. One of the other things to be aware of for this novel is that it's possible to land a plane on these long, solid, empty beaches of Lewis, of Harris in particular. This one's on South Uist, actually. And so I'm just going to coming to the end now. I'm just going to mention Coffin Road, the novel Coffin Road. I've shown you the reason for Coffin Road and the way it goes. The coffins are brought from the east to the west to Luskintyre Beach, Luskintyre Cemetery. This is now a walking path called the Harris Way. This is the beginning of the Luskintyre western end of it. This is the coffins appearing in this direction, coming towards us for burial in Luskintyre on this very moody November day when I went to find it. The beginning of Coffin Road begins with a guy being washed up here on this beach and finding his way into this house. I think it must be this house, probably an older version of this house in the novel, because it's the first turning after the cemetery at Luskintyre. This is one of the most famous and beautiful, spectacular bays of the Outer Hebrides. So he finds his way into this house, which he realizes he's lost his memory, and he realizes this is his house. It's now a holiday home, rental house, but you can see here the tide is out, it's coming in, he's washed up on that beach. He comes over these Marram dunes, where there is still a white horse that appears in the novel, grazing in those dunes. So May has chosen an international environmental issue for this novel rather than one specifically located in the island's ecology, such as the proposal for a Harris super quarry, the decline of the Atlantic salmon, or the overfishing of the island's coastal waters. Only in his photographic book, The Hebrides, does Peter May comment on current proposals for huge wind farms on Lewis. If planners have their way, this landscape will shortly be marred by forests of wind turbines. So he doesn't engage with these big issues. He chooses bee colony collapse for the theme of Coffin Road. And I've sort of been thinking about this and come to the conclusion that it's not the first priority, is it, of the crime novelist to be responsible for addressing these big environmental issues, those local environmental issues to the islands. One might argue that May's achievement is both a greater and a more subtle one that renders his Lewis and Harris novels of importance beyond the confines of the genre of crime fiction. So it's quite a lot for us to talk about there. Maybe some of you have already read some of these novels. And I hope this has been an introduction to what I think is a really lovely lovely writing that does the job of being also being a page turner as a crime novel. So I look forward to questions, discussions, and your own views on crime fiction to come.